thank you for tuning in to After Dark with Rob and Andrew, available on the America Out Loud platform, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. We're also on Apple iTunes. Tonight, I'm flying solo. In a way, should I say, Andrew had a previous engagement. So joining me tonight is Heather Robinson of the New York Post. And we're glad to have her on because there is a lot to talk about. Now, if you noticed, the beginning of the week, Andrew and I, we started off the show talking about some of the things that are taking place, as we always do, in the country. We ended last week talking about the Hunter Biden white privilege sweetheart deal that he got after the charges were dropped. Well, not dropped, but he pleaded to a lesser charge of misdemeanor. Charges that anyone else, especially a black man, would have been charged with a felony and then gone to jail for 3 to 6 years. But of course, when you have the last name Biden and you're white and you're a Democrat, it has its privileges. We also spoke about Republicans needing to find a backbone and get tough and fight the game the way Democrats are fighting the game. You guys saw last week how, I think it was Annalena Paluna, she wanted them to fine Adam Schiff, $17 million fine, and Republicans balked at it. So she withdrew it, then she put it up again, a censor. She wanted him to be censored. She put it up again without the fine, and they agreed to it. Although, of course, Democrats didn't like it. And I was looking at this, and I'm thinking, man, you know, Republicans, have we not learned anything these past few years as to how the Democrats' machine work, their modus operandi? They hold no prisoners, and the prisoners that they do, they will sink them like a hot potato. They don't care. We also spoke about whistleblowers blowing the whistle on the Biden circle of corruption, their regime. And we know that there's a lot of corruption that's going on with that family. But for some reason, it can't get any traction so that the American public are concerned and saying, wait, this guy is committing the crimes that you guys have been accusing former President Trump of. And there's evidence, there's whistleblowers, there are records, there are emails, there are text messaging, and it goes nowhere. And Republicans, only a few, it seems, Heather, are willing to push the button and say, wait a minute, we need to put the brakes on this. We need to stop this. We need to start impeaching people. And I read the other day someone was saying, we got to be careful when we ask for impeachment. We got to make certain that we get the right ones, and we got to make certain that it's going to go through. I don't necessarily agree with that, because even if we were to impeach Biden, impeach Merrick Garland, impeach Christopher Wray, kick out Adam Schiff, or impeach him if he can be impeached, they're not going to be removed from office, because it's going to land in the Senate and the Democrats control the Senate and they're going to vote it down. So to me, the act of doing it, that speaks volume. The same thing with Trump. They knew that they weren't going to be able to kick him out. Or did they? Because, you know, we had a lot of feckless Republicans that just don't care for Trump. And as I said on last night's show, there are a lot of people that don't like Trump. I get it. But hear me. They don't like him, but they like his policies. And I take my hat off to those supporters of Trump's, those conservatives, and some maybe aren't conservatives, that they're going beyond the man. And they're saying, look, I might not like him, the person, but his policies, his Make America Great Again policies, I love them. I like it. He gets it. So he might throw temper tantrums, so it seems. He might be a bull in a china shop. I didn't like the mean tweets. Now he's on Truth Social. But the man gets it. And he will stand up for us. And I don't know about you, Heather, but I would rather have someone in my corner like that any day of the week. Someone who's willing to fight for me. So that when the bullies come after me, this person's going to stand up and go, you're not touching him unless you go through me. And with Trump, I heard him speak this past weekend. I think it was at a Christian conservative event. And he was saying, I'm doing this for you. I'm fighting for you because I know you can't do it. He said, I don't have to do this. I can take my money and I can go home and I can live my life happily. But I'm doing it for you. And mm-hmm. he said, the amount of money that I have lost since I've gotten in this, and you know, the man has lost money. I mean, not only with business deals, but paying for attorneys.
Yeah, I wondered about that. I hadn't heard that he said that, but I have sort of.
Yeah, he's at this on this past weekend.
That, you know, he's taken a big financial hit and his family as well from having chosen to run for and be president. I know, I don't know all the details, but I know that they all took pains to divest themselves of a lot of things and step away, you know, from running businesses when they were serving the country. You know, if I'm not mistaken, I know that Trump's daughter gave up her business and, you know, I guess do you know about that, Rob? I guess Trump put a lot of business on hold so as to avoid.
He did. He did. He put a lot of business on hold. But here's the other thing about it.
Yeah.
Well, he did. But here's the thing that I don't think a lot of Americans or people are aware of is that in the Constitution, he could still do his business. And in fact, he could go and entertain business with other countries.
Really?
And in order to make, I think it was like a goodwill. Yeah, I looked this up and I was shocked.
Yeah.
I'm like, he's allowed to still do it. Now, he can't like do it as in a sense that it's going to be self-serving, but he could still actively run his company. But what most individuals will do is that they will put it in a blind trust so that they can't say, oh, well, he's trying to make money for himself. But Trump did not. I was about to say, granted, he did not put his in a blind trust. He just stepped away and said, my sons are going to take care of it. And apparently they did, because we never heard the media saying, oh, he's still playing around with his business. No, he made certain that there was a separation. So again, someone with that integrity, willing to put it all on the line to fight for us. And I've got to say this also, what Trump is saying today, Trump said it 40 years ago or 30 years ago. If you go back to the 80s and you look at all the interviews that he gave with Oprah Winfrey, Barbara Walters, Mike Wallace, Chris Wallace, he said the exact same thing about China and our country, and that if we're not careful, the day that we're living in right now would come. And lo and behold, it has manifested itself. And we are living in the exact times and the things that he had cautioned us against.
Mm-hmm.
Wars, the exact same thing. And at the time they said, well, would you be president? He said, well, you know, I thought about it. I don't know. I don't think I would. Fast forward, he became the president, fighting for the American people to make America great again. And because of that, the deep swamp, the deep state, whatever you want to call it, they don't like it. They did not like it. And it's, we must defeat him by any means necessary. And I would like for all of our listeners to also realize that the Constitution was set up so that people like Trump would run, not career politicians. Because yes. Trump was not a politician. It was designed so that average Joe Blows would stand up and say, hey, I know what the people want. I have my finger on the pulse of the nation. But what we've been getting is a lot of businessmen, a lot of political people with a lot of political connections. Their campaigns are funded by all these big interest groups. So they're unable.
Not businessmen, Rob. I'd only correct you there. I mean, I think most of them have done very little business. They're mostly career politicians, people who went
Correct.
Straight graduate school, law school, whatever, into some brief little, you know, small, you know, feint at a career like Obama taught as an instructor a little bit at University of Chicago. He's an academic, you know, obviously a bright guy. But I mean, whether it's he, whether it's the Bidens, whether it's Bill Clinton, I mean, they didn't build businesses.
They didn't build businesses. So when I say businessmen, meaning that through them, these businessmen who out there that control these companies have put their interests in them so that they would carry on their will or their directives to do things that they want to sway policies or what have you. But you're right. They weren't. Mm-hmm. They basically did absolutely nothing in their own right. So then it begs a question, and I think we spoke about this on one of our shows. How did they get so bloody rich? How did they go in?
So-called public service.
And leaving as multimillionaires.
You know, I mean, the case of the Clintons and Obamas, I mean, I guess they were popular amongst, you know, half the country, and they wrote books and gave speeches and all that and made a ton of money that, I mean, you can say that there's something, you know, maybe kind of improper seeming about it, but I mean, okay, whatever. If people are willing to pay them through the nose, they are. I mean, there is an appearance of, you know, something kind of unseemly about it, but I mean, it's a lot better than apparently Biden's just taken bribes, allegedly. I mean, seems like the corruption really is outrageous with that family. And, you know, in any case, none of these families, you know, have really, that I am aware of, you know, come up, you know, through the school of real hard knocks or, you know, business, you know, or the military or anything like that. I mean, they basically go from law school to some kind of, you know, very brief job or else directly into national politics. And, you know, they come out of the Ivy League world. They, I guess, hobnob with the right people. And so it becomes about hobnobbing and favor doing and whatever all, you know, you need to do to make a lot of connections. And I guess, you know, that's the politician's personality, right? It's kind of backslapping and glad handing. And we all know that's part of politics. But I do agree with you that I think the founder's vision was more of, you know, a citizen government. And I do recall that one of the important points, you know, as far as the House of Representatives, especially as it was supposed to be close to the people, these were the elected officials and the Senate who would come from the different parts of the country and represent, you know, their constituents and to be close to them and be, you know, from those states and go, you know what the people needed. And it wasn't supposed to be a club of people who go to all the same schools and, you know, get there strictly through doing favors in Washington, D.C. for each other. And I think you're right that what we have is something that's much more elitist, much more about connections, much more self-serving. And I think that's especially been true, you know, with the last few presidents. I would venture to say even more so. I mean, than Congress. I think, you know, I know Congress is unpopular. I think we have at least a few members of Congress who at least try to serve their constituents. I mean, I think that these last few presidents have really, you know, been just come out of been anointed by these the big parties, which are beholden to all these special interests. And, you know, I haven't really seen that they've been, you know, real grassroots kinds of candidates at all.
Well, I think the moment of truth came about when Trump won the election and you saw past presidents on both sides of the aisle coming together, and you've never seen that before, and they became bosom buddies. I mean, you look at Bush and the Obamas, like, are you serious? And Michelle and her hugs that she, and I think it's genuine. It's a genuine hug. There's nothing fake about it. And you look at the Clintons. Now, I don't think that they, as far as Bill Clinton, I think they're okay with Bill, but Hillary, no. She'll never fit in, but they're willing to come together to go after a perceived mutual enemy, and that being Donald Trump. The dislike that they have for him, and why is that? It is because he wants to make America, well, my thought is he wants to make America great again. And you were about to say, Heather?
Right, and he, along with what you sketched out, Rob, I mean, it's like the exact opposite of their trajectory. They went from being, you know, like ordinary folks / you know, ordinary privileged, you know, people in academia, law school, whatever, people whose ambition, frankly, outstripped their talent, in my opinion, you know, whether we're talking about Hillary, you know, I mean, Bill and Obama, they're bright guys, but, you know, it's not like they built billion-dollar companies or did anything that remarkable before they got there. The Bushes, I mean, whatever they, you know, W. Bush I always liked, but he was, you know, a wealthy guy who got a big sweetheart deal buying a football team or whatever. But I mean, these weren't people who were really captains, titans of industry on their own steam, you know, or people who had achieved, you know, greatness in the sciences or, you know, the military. I mean, they were people who were like the product of, you know, an elite you know, whatever. They'd succeeded in academia, you know what I mean? But nothing wrong with academia, but, you know, I mean, you know, they're not really people who have, empirically speaking, contributed something of great value to the country before they strove for these high offices and they got them. So essentially their version of making it was not building something or creating something or doing something remarkable in the fields of sports, science, entertainment, business, anything. I mean, it was like they got there through the system, through this system of, you know, having charisma, doing favors, climbing, you know, whatever, the party system. And then, you know, essentially, I think you could argue they really took from the country in a lot of ways. You know, they, okay, Clinton wasn't a bad president, Bill, but I mean, you know, they didn't really dramatically improve things for ordinary people. You know, the whole, you know, group of them got us into some wars we lost and whatever. I mean, if anything, they took from the country more than they gave, I think you could say. And here you have Trump, who's somebody who's built, you know, whatever you think of good gambling. I mean, it's a legitimate business providing entertainment and employment for hundreds of thousands, you know, millions of Americans, built this big business, built a real estate empire, you know, and actually took a financial loss in order to serve the country, you know, and had the autonomy because he had the money and the media savvy to not just simply be beholden to special interests and others who've done him favors. So he's like, his trajectory is kind of the opposite of theirs. You know, he's a person who built a lot and helped create a lot of jobs and employment and entertainment and buildings, et cetera. And then, you know, at least gave up a little bit of it in order to serve the country, you know, and he didn't need the money or the fame. And so, you know, no wonder they're threatened by him. You know, they and the whole Washington establishment, a lot of it is people who, you know, arguably build these careers, these, you know, what's turned into a money-making racket. I mean, historically, public service wasn't really a way to get rich, but I mean, these last few presidential presidents and their families,
They managed to do it. Oh, right. Yeah. We're up against a commercial break, but you said something that I want to definitely dissect, and that is the previous presidents took from the country as opposed to giving. And that's a powerful statement. And I want us to delve into that a little more on the other side of the break. You tuned in to After Dark with Rob and Andrew, and my special guest co-host Heather Robinson of the New York Post will be back after this commercial break.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company launched the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. The Wellness Company's chief medical board designed every supplement and medical protocol with your health in mind. From groundbreaking supplements like the Spike Support Formula to unique care like Freedom from Big Pharma. Join a healthcare system that puts your health and well-being above the interest of Big Pharma's bottom line. It's the way healthcare should be, with a company that shares your values. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
These days, every time you turn on the news, it seems like there's a new threat to your health. Maintaining a strong immune system has never been more critical. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost to help you strengthen your immunity. Unlike other supplements that don't work, Immune Super Boost is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra absorption of science-backed nutrients proven to support immunity, like vitamin C, D3, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea. These physician-formulated gels come in a small gel pack. Tear off the top and shoot it down, or mix it in water. Boost your immunity. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD.
We know you love the versatility and portability of the Genesis Fogger, but sometimes you just want to set it and forget it. Well, We heard you. Introducing the UX4 HOCL Atomizer. This stationary unit quietly protects you and is perfect for smaller spaces. With over 250,000 units sold in Japan, it's now available in the United States. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to see the UX4 in action and receive a 15% discount on either Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you're ready for anything.
And folks, we're back after the break. And when we were going to break, Heather said something that really struck me, and I never really thought about it. It might have been in the back of my head, but the way she said it, it gave me reason to pause. And before we came on earlier, I was telling her we were going over a list of stories that we were going to talk about. And this wasn't one of them, but I was led in that direction with our dialogue, and it morphed into something so completely different. And then when Heather said toward the end of the first half that the previous presidents took more from the country than what they gave, that's powerful. Just think about it. Trump came into office already self-made. He didn't have to do it, but he did. And along the way, he could have at any moment said, you know, I don't need this. I have my billions. Let me go and take care of me and forget about this. And, you know, a lot of people, Heather, when they started attacking him with the whole fake Russia collusion and he's an illegitimate president and Hurricane Russia and we got to investigate Trump, a lot of commentators who went to these Ivy League schools said that, you know what, Trump is not going to last long. He's going to look at this and he's going to walk away. He's going to give it all up because he can't handle it. He can't take it. He doesn't have thick skin. And we hear that often. He doesn't have thick skin. And you look at everything they have thrown at him, from Crossfire Hurricane, Russia collusion, and being indicted, impeached twice, indicted twice, but he's still going. So it begs the question, why is this man still giving so much of himself? And what is he getting out of it compared to what the previous presidents got? Money, fame, fortune. Whereas Trump, it's been nothing but a heartache when you really look at it. But yet and still, he's willing to fight for the American people. Heather, what are your thoughts?
I think that he's a patriot, Rob. I think he cares about the country. I think that that has to be a big part of what keeps him going. Now, maybe I'm idealizing a bit. I mean, some people feel, you know, let's face it, he does have a big ego and that he's been so under siege that he, you know, they say, oh, well, he has to do this because he can't go down as a loser or whatever. He can't just walk away. I mean, first of all, by any objective standard, you know, the man is a billionaire. He's got a great family, all these kids who love him and grandkids and a beautiful wife. And I don't think really that quite holds up as a total explanation that he would be so insecure at this point after being more successful than 99.99999% of humanity and having all this family support, you know, that he would just do this to prove something to, you know, losers on Twitter who hate him and malcontents who hate him. I mean, I think, you know, sure that he has a big ego, but I do think that he knows that this is BS. I mean, that the country has been brainwashed in a lot of ways by an establishment that serves itself and for the most part, nothing is going to change, you know, without real leadership. And I think he does see himself in that vein. And I mean, you know, I don't think it's really, my sense of it is that it isn't true, because I don't think he'd be being prosecuted now if the other side didn't believe he was going to run again. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, Rob, but that prosecution, that this whole you know, now harassing him first about the Karen McDougal stuff and that E. Jean Carroll and now the classified documents. That didn't all happen, did it, until he had pretty much indicated his intention to run again, correct?
Right, and not Karen McDougal. Well, no. What was her name? Her name, was it Karen McDougal? Oh, I'm thinking of Susan McDougal. It was Karen McDougal. Actually, they had been talking about it. And what we have to remember, that it was November of last year, before Thanksgiving, New York City changed the law that would allow victims to go back in time and make an accusation against a person, and then they could charge them. So that was all thanks to Trump saying, because I'm going to run. And I think he announced he was going to run in October. So they already had plans of doing this. Whatever her name is, Jean Carroll, was already threatening that she was going to do it.
Mm-hmm. But they didn't actually do it till after he announced.
Until, right. And then they got together, had the laws changed, and they said, okay, now we're going to do it. But it just goes back to what you were saying. Now, right.
Well, that supports the theory that, yes, that I think that people have it flipped. I don't think it's that he's running because he has to get them.
No, not at all.
He has to get him because he's running. In other words, I think he could have, if he had faded off quietly into the sunset after the last election, I think he certainly could have done that. And I think they would have left him alone.
Do you actually think they would have left him alone? I don't think so.
Probably, because they may have done a little bit of just out of sheer vindictiveness, but I think even they, insane as they are not going to waste enormous resources on someone they feel they've beaten. I mean, I think that they want to prevent him from getting reelected. I think that's what this is about.
Oh, yeah. Definitely that's what this is about. But just going back to what you were saying, as far as Trump's ego, he has an ego. And to be clear, in order to run for the presidency of the United States, you have to have a degree of being completely self-absorbed. And we saw that with Bill Clinton. I didn't see it as much with George W., George Bush's son. We saw it with Obama, although he tried to tried to keep it under wraps. But without a doubt, he thought he was the smartest man in the room. And he still thinks that. And you can see it. He exudes that whenever he's giving an interview. The way he attacked Tim Scott and Nikki Haley. He's never attacked any other candidate and came out against any other candidate. But those two, for some reason, got up under his skin and he felt the need to come out and disparage them. And we know that he doesn't like Trump. But just going back to what you were saying, that these Clinton, Bush number two, and Obama, I mean, it's hard to put my finger on it. With Bush number two, because he seemed like such a nice, quiet man, and that I want to say that he was like a puppet and there was someone directing him, but at the same time, he would come out and say, no, I made these decisions. I stand by the mistakes. I did this. But Clinton and Obama, they're narcissists, and they certainly, in my opinion, got back more than what they gave, and what they did give, they gave it selfishly. And with, as far as Obama is concerned, what he gave us is complete chaos, division. No one will ever call it out. No one wants to see it. But when you look at and read John Durham's report, where he basically indicted Obama and his White House of knowing what the other narcissist, Hillary Clinton, was doing, you would think his report, John Durham's report, he came out and emphatically said that John Brennan went to Obama and told him, as well as then Vice President Joe Biden, what Hillary Clinton was doing, that she had concocted this entire Russia collusion thing, and that this is how it was going to be played out. You would think they would say, we need to call Obama in and find out, what did you know? Well, we already know what you knew, but why didn't you say anything? And don't lie, because we got it on record. But look at the chaos that they have put the country through. And for what? Just to stop one man who has given so much of himself, one man whom they want to jail. Like you said, he can say, oh, I don't want this. I'm going to give it up. But I don't think they would let it go. They will not let this go.
I think they would let it go.
I don't think so, Heather. I don't think they would.
destroy them. Yeah, they do at this point. I guess you're right. But I think there probably was a time. I mean, this is all speculation. But right. I think there probably was a time, but I mean, where he could have walked away right after the last election.
But is that his DNA? Would he? He's not the kind of person that would walk away. Now, had it been you or I mean, I would probably say, forget this. I'm out of here. I mean, they're trying to ruin me. They're trying to destroy my family. They're trying to turn me against my family when they will come out with the reports that, oh, Trump doesn't like Ivana anymore. He likes Melania. Oh, and they're fighting. He has to take sides. I mean, the stories that they were constantly running, trying to cause division. And we all know that they're very good at causing division. Look at all the Hollywood marriages that they have like intervened in and put up all these stories. And I'm like, why are these people putting their life out there in front of them? It's no one's business what they do, but then they would fall for it. But then you look at Trump, and you look at his wife. Now, from what we see, it seems as though it's a tight-knit family. But the media definitely wants to destroy this family. They want to rip them to shreds. And why? Simply because he loves this country. Simply because he wants to make certain that it's made great again, simply because he wants something, he wants to leave something for our children and the next generation and the generation thereafter. Mm-hmm. While Democrats, the only thing they're doing is trying to destroy everything. They want to destroy America. They want you to think that America is the worst place possible compared to what? What other country is better than America? And no one ever thinks to ask that question or say, you have these Gen Zers, Gen Xs, or whatever they call themselves, saying, oh, America's bad, America's racist, and we don't like it, and we don't like Donald Trump. But then if you were to ask them, just ask the question, what country would you want to go to? Because we need to get you a ticket there so that you can see that America is the best, and that is the reason why you have illegal aliens coming here.
Yeah.
They're dying, crossing the river to get here. But they're telling you that it's a bad place. It's like, this doesn't make any sense. It's like, stop and think about it. If this country is so bad, why is it, Pratell, that we want so many people to come through our southern border? Why is that? If the country is so horribly racist, if the country is white supremacist, and the Republicans are so horrible, why would we do that? Why would Trump want to fight that fight, knowing that all these people are against him, including members of the so-called Republican Party? You have this group, I don't know if you're familiar with them, Heather, I spoke about it the other night, Project 65. Have you heard of them? It's a group it's a group of attorneys that have come together, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, and they're threatening any attorney that says that they're going to represent Trump with a disbarment. They're going to make a complaint to get the person disbarred. Think
about this.
Why would you do it? And then why would the committee, the Bar Association, even entertain that, knowing what these idiots are doing?
I don't understand how that's possible.
They did it to Alan Dershowitz. They tried to get him disbarred. And he came out and he said that any attorney chooses to represent Trump, and if these knuckleheads go after them, that he would represent them free of charge. Because he knows that this is a bunch of hooey. It makes no sense.
I mean, the worst murderers in the world get a legal defense in this country.
Right.
On what basis can they possibly make a legal argument? Literally anybody in the country gets a legal defense.
It's unbelievable. So then again, it just goes back to, as you said, you know, what he has given compared to the others.
I mean, anybody who would say that and try to use the law as rationale for that doesn't, you know, I mean, I don't need to go to law school to know that one day in law school you'd learn that makes no sense and it's completely antithetical to our entire system. So,
but yet and still they're able to do it and they're doing it. So it goes back to what you were saying. Look at what these other guys, what exactly did Obama give this country that we could really say, wow, I can't believe it. What did Clinton, what did he give us besides Monica Lewinsky in a blue dress? What did Obama give us besides Obamacare and people's premiums are going up? What did they do that was so significant that we could say, wow?
The healthcare system's a mess. I mean, I'm very blessed to be healthy. And I'll tell you, one of the reasons I also put a lot of work into taking care of myself is I don't want to deal with this healthcare system unless I have to. I mean, my friends who are having to, you know, get cancer treatment, get operations, tell me that it's awful. You know, the wait times, the inefficiency has not improved things overall. I mean, maybe it has for somebody somewhere. I guess the very poor perhaps maybe do better with Obamacare. I don't know. I mean, I hope somebody's benefiting because from what I can see, it's just everything's slower, less efficient. And yes, you know, I'll tell you what, Rob, I'm back here in New York, and I think, you know, I mean, the city's still here. It's still a great city, but you see the outgrowth of these policies, these terrible misguided policies. You know, the mentally ill are running wild, aggressive in the streets. There's pot smoke smell everywhere. Bikes are whizzing around, almost crashing into the elderly and other pedestrians. You know, I mean, I don't mean to be a, you know, downer here. I mean, there's still lots of interesting people and, you know, there's a spirit, you know, of inclusion, which is a good value, you know. I mean, this isn't about wanting, I mean, it's great to see that, you know, the diversity of New York, the creativity is all still here, but there's definitely a feeling of, I wouldn't go so far as to say mayhem, but, you know, things are more chaotic, more dirty. They feel a little more scary. I couldn't find a toy store the other day. You know, a lot of the small businesses have closed. And, you know, this is the outgrowth of, you know, liberal, so-called liberal, really hard left policy that, I mean, I just, you know, I think Mayor Giuliani's legacy, unfortunately, is in tatters. And, you know, this is what people want, I guess. This is what the left thinks it wants. Although I have to say, I do know several people who've moved to Florida. And interestingly, some of my New York friends who are liberal, who are still here, are actually, you know, got a place in Florida or paying taxes in Florida. You know, the irony is the wealthy people, some of them have either moved out or maintain multiple residences and don't pay taxes here. Some of them. I do, but, you know.
Yeah, but again, the state of affairs under these policies of the left is nothing to be desired, yet still they tell us that this is what people want. And is it what people want because they don't know any better? They don't know that the politicians, as we were saying,
Rob, they're just indoctrinated is all I could see. Say, I mean, I think it's that the media is predominantly leftist. The institutions of academia, this is what people who are educated in America in public schools and private colleges, you know, are taught that if you're a good person and you're not a racist, you're a Democrat. You know, if you're not anti-gay, you're a Democrat, you know. And I think, unfortunately, I think in the last go-round, I think the abortion issue cost the Republicans a lot without even getting into, you know, the moral complexities of it. I do think that, you know, I mean, I do respect the pro-life, you know, the intent behind the position, you know, to protect babies and unborn lives. But I think that taking out a very hardline position there, I mean, that's one issue that I do think is out of sync with a lot of people, you know. And I just think that combined with the brainwashing, you know, it cost us conservatives, and the whole country is suffering for it from what I can see.
But then it goes back to what I was saying, I think, on last night's show, and that was the messaging. Republicans aren't good at messaging. We don't know how to message. Democrats are good at it, and we've got to get good at it and better. We've got to play the game the way they play it. And we're coming up on a commercial break, and we'll continue this discussion on the other side of it, because it's one that I don't think a lot of people have been thinking about. And it is, as you mentioned, you know, look at what Trump gave compared to the others who were takers and not givers. You tuned in to After Dark with Robin Andrew on the American Outlaw platform and my special guest host, Heather Robinson of the New York Post. We'll be back after this commercial break.
Well, the Outlaw Truth was the rallying call that started it all. A wide spectrum of programming from world and political news to societal, your health, and cultural stories. 7 amazing years of news stories, informative podcasts, and great talk radio. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Hello, I'm Ben Marble, MD, and I founded MyFreeDoctor.com as a donation-supported, faith-based nonprofit with a mission to save lives by delivering free doctor visits to patients in all 50 states of America. MyFreeDoctor.com treats a broad range of health concerns like COVID-19, long COVID, sinus infections, urinary tract infections, rashes, medication refills, and more. So please visit MyFreeDoctor.com, where we're healing America one person at a time.
We're back for the last half of After Dark with Robin Andrew. And I gotta say, the conversations that we've had tonight, we've just covered the gamut of things. And one of the things that I mentioned that, you know, really stood out was Heather was saying about previous presidents who gave so little but took a lot compared to Trump, who, in our humble opinion, gave a lot and is giving a lot because he does not have to be in this fight. And why would he? We know that he has a huge ego. We know that he's very blusterous. He says a lot. Sometimes I cringe and I'm like, please don't say that. You know, just be quiet. But Heather, I don't know if you heard him say the other day, and I was mentioning this to Andrew in the other night show, that Brett Beyer had interviewed him. And he said, well, you know, Mr. President, you have a reputation of whenever you fire someone, you just go after them viciously. And he just went down the line of the people that Trump had, you know, attacked. I'm like, oh my God, here we go. But it had to happen. I'm glad he brought it up. And he said, why is that? And Trump said, well, you know, I've thought about that. He said, I wish I wasn't as, you know, controversial. He didn't say that word. He said something else, and I can't remember what it was. And then he said, but if I don't, I wouldn't get any coverage from the media. They wouldn't cover me. And when you think about it, they probably wouldn't. They were just like, he's an afterthought. So he said that to Brett, and then he made a video. And he addressed the same thing. And he said, you know, a lot of people are always asking me, like, why are you getting into fights with people? And why do you talk about people? Why do you say this? He's like, it's not something that I want to do. He said, but if I don't do that, and if I allow people to come out and attack me and say things, and if I don't respond just as hard, the media will take what they said and will constantly play it over and over again to give truth to it, although it has no truth. He said, so I counter that and I go after them just as hard. And I thought, wow, that's interesting. He said, no, I don't want to do it. He said, but I have to because I want them to see, wait a minute, what they're seeing is not right. He said, no, what I'm saying is going to dominate the news. And it does.
Well, yes. And also I would add, you know, consider all the money these people make off of Trump, the networks, the columnists. I mean, I don't want to name names, but there's one particular young woman I know of who really is not much of a writer. She's from a family of great writers. And this young woman has made her bones. I mean, she has made a huge career out of, I would say 90% of what she writes is Trump bashing.
Oh, is that Maggie Haberman? Go ahead.
No, but I mean, she's someone I met years ago, and she was a nice enough person when I met her. So I don't even want to name names. I'm just saying that there are people who have built whole careers in the past few years, have just zipped up to the apex of media, and they're very mediocre talents. You know, they're okay writers. They're not particularly perceptive or insightful. They're not as smart as you, Rob, I'll tell you that much. But, you know, Trump bashing sells. And if you have even a sliver of talent and you can, you know, turn a phrase, all you need to do is bash Trump, you know, to get published in big outlets. People have, you know, the people who hate him, they live on hate and they love to hate him. And they pay to do it. And we saw this, you know, with a lot of the media coverage of the past few years. So it's an interesting thing to consider how much money Trump has made and how many careers that he, you know, is such a unique individual, and their ridiculous hatred of him, you know, that's what they've done with themselves. That's what they've occupied themselves with. People who don't have a huge amount of creativity, And a lot of them have built big careers off it. It's pretty gross, really.
And he's even recognized that a lot of these people, if it wasn't for him, they would not have the careers that they have. And you look at fake news CNN, they're suffering right now. I mean, that's how bad it is for them. Whereas when Trump was on the scene, they were at the top of the news spectrum. And when he gave the town hall a couple of months ago, look at what he did for their ratings, albeit a lot of them didn't like it, but he brought in money for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more understandable and healthy the way we talk about him than people who are living to hate. But yes, there's no question he is a lightning rod. He is a force. And it's funny to me that the people who spend their lives and build their careers, you know, and 80% of what they do is hate him, don't see that. I mean, if he's so terrible, why are they spending all their time on him? You know, they don't see themselves. They don't see how absurd that is. You know, why don't they just ignore him if he's so, you know, inept and such a bad guy? You know, I mean, do they have any compunction about spending 75% of their time professionally on him then? You know, of course, they twist it into saying that he's like Hitler. And, you know, in that fantasy, they are the resistance. They even call themselves that, which has always been totally obnoxious. Because
That's what they're telling people. Yeah, that he's
they're the ones who are grandiose. They imagine they would have the courage to stand up to a real Hitler or something, which obviously Trump is not in any way. But, you know, it's like they don't see you know, that's part of the hatred too, is a chance for them to feel like they are opposing some great evil. And it's like gives them a sense of grandiosity. So
they think that what they're doing is spot on, and that they have to interpret everything for us and that we can't figure it out. But we figured out, at least I have, that this man, as you said, Heather, he is a patriot, because no other person, I don't think, would put themselves in this type of situation. You look at previous candidates who, when they were met against all of these obstacles.
I know.
So maybe it is his ego, but I also think, Heather,
he's tough. He's tough as
tough. He's a tough London, and the love of the country. He sees what's happening. And he spoke about this, as I mentioned at the top of the show, 30 or 40 years ago, he said, this is what's going to happen. He has a lot on the line. And it would only take one juror that does not like him to say, guilty. I mean, when they found him guilty of that case with Corrine Jean Carroll, I'm like, are you serious? Are you serious? And he could have just said, oh, my God. But he's like, nope, I'm going to see this through. And then indicted again. And now you're looking at an indictment from possible, I think it's Atlanta, Georgia, and then another in D.C. It's like they're looking for something. And it's so evident that they're looking for something. They just want to pin something on him to a man who has given his all for this country to make it great again. And then to come out and still hold his head up high. Remember when he had COVID and they took him to the hospital? Mm-hmm. And the media was speculating, oh, is he dead? We haven't heard from him. Oh, he must be dead. All this, all that. Oh, he has to be dead. He's probably on a ventilator. And when he came back and landed on the South Lawn, and then he went into the White House and came out, they went ballistic. Oh, how could he? How dare he? He's probably giving someone else COVID. Oh, this man is so self-hearted. He can't be doing this. They went crazy because they thought that they had him, that this was going to be it, but it did not stop him. He kept going. So with all of that, everything that he has withstood and still standing, they won't give up. They are committed. You have Barack Obama. And I had said once, you know, if Obama was a true statesman, he would come out and say, guys, it's time to wrap this up. We got to stop. We've got to bring the country back together. You might not like his political views, but come on, we've got to stop this. This is insane. Barack Obama, who knew what Hillary Clinton was up to, who knew that this entire racial collusion deal was a complete fake, but he sat back and allowed the country to go through this turmoil. $35 million. Adam Schiff, $17 million because of their lies. And then they say that they love the country. All Barack Obama had to do was say, no, when John Brennan came in and told him what Hillary was plotting, all he had to do was say, no, don't do it. We can't do this. But mm-hmm. he was too selfish because he was afraid that Trump was going to outshine him. A Republican president was going to come in behind a Democrat and outshine him, making him or relegating him to a footnote in history. He could not allow that. So because of his own selfishness, being self-centered, because of his own ego, Barack Obama sat back and said, let's let it happen. Let it happen. And to this day, he has not come out and said anything about it. I remember earlier on, Heather, in some of our shows, I said that I wish Barack Obama could be the statesman and come out and say, let's stop this.
Yeah.
Well, that was a wish that was never going to happen.
Yeah, I guess he would really be the only one. I mean, he was like one of the only figures.
He could call the media. He could call the media and say, guys, stop it. He never wanted Joe to be president. And now you guys, you kind of see why. Now we got to right this wrong. I know you don't like Trump, but we've got to stop this because the man who's in the office right now, he is extremely dangerous and he's causing harm. He's causing a lot of harm to the Democrats' legacy, to the party of the Democrats. And if Republicans were to wake up and took control of the messaging, they get ex-Democrats out for, I would say, the better part of a century. That's wishful thinking. But if they only took control of the messaging and worked together, because the next president who goes into office, be it Democrat or Republican, they're going to have a heavy lift getting this country back on the right road, Heather.
Oh.
And it does not look good at all. And why people aren't calling it out, why people aren't saying, people like the media, guys, we're in trouble here. Why Barack Obama has not come back and say, stop this. Again, he's taking. He wants to take. And what he's taking is his popularity. He wants people to still think that, oh, he was the best. He was the best. So he's got to make certain that he destroys Trump or the media destroys Trump so that he can come out as being on top. He wants to make certain that Joe Biden's presidency is failed so that when they do look at it in history, they'll say, well, the last great president was Barack Obama. Barack Obama is selfish. He continues to get and not give. Because you would think he would say, I love this country. We got to stop this. But he doesn't like the country. He's okay with it being in chaos. Just as long, Heather, just as long as he's able, history will look back and say that he was the last great Democrat president. What do you say?
Yeah. And I mean, I wish that he had spoken out on a lot of things. I feel like during the riots of 2020, the few people who did speak out were the ordinary people. I remember George Floyd's poor family stood there and pleaded with people to be peaceful and to stop the violence. They are good people and they weren't listened to. I remember Andrew Young, the mayor of Atlanta, tried briefly, and Keisha Lance Bottoms in Atlanta briefly, but there were very few voices of verging calm and peace and the vision of Martin Luther King. And wow, you know, if Obama had done that, how many lives might have been saved and how much healing might have had the opportunity to at least start to begin to happen. You know, and as far as Trump, if he urged unity and respect for the presidency, you know, whether you like who happens to be elected or not, that is the essence of democracy. If someone like Obama had said that, wow, it would have been amazing. I agree.
It would have been huge had he come out and said, let's stop this. We got to stop the acrimony. We are, as he said, remember his speech during the presidential campaign? And he said, there's no red America. There's no blue America. We're all United States of America. And people just fell in love with it. And from that moment, they saw the next president. But then I think about it, and we've spoken about this before, and I said, did he really mean it, or was he just playing on people's emotions? He was saying what he knew they wanted to hear, but there was nothing behind it. It was just an empty speech, but the people didn't know it because they were looking at Barack Obama. It was coming from his mouth. And since he gave that speech, he never, ever recanted that speech or never, ever, not recant, but never revisited that speech or said anything about it. And that's huge for him to come out and say something that people thought was so powerful, that he was bringing the country together. Yet when he came into power, it was as if though he divided us even more. Again, he's taking and not giving. If he was such a conciliatory, he would have come out and said, let's stop this. I'm going to go in and I'm going to stand with Trump. But think of how powerful that would be if he were to come out and say, I'm going to stand with him because what I'm seeing, what I'm hearing, it does not look good. And if our Justice Department and our FBI are guilty of anything, any of the things that they're saying, that's not good. And as an American, we should all be concerned. Think of how powerful that would be, him giving back as opposed to taking, but he won't do it. Instead, he's off on podcast talking about racial issues, diversity and equity, and how he could do this. And if he could be the president, he would sit around in his sweats and he would call all the shots. But not once is he thinking, what can I do for the country? Oh, and by the way, he's still planning on his, presidential library. But to come out and be the statesman that we need at this point in time, to bring us all together, and then to say, remember what I said, we're not red America, we're not blue America, we're United States of America. Now, imagine how powerful that would be. And then we could probably say, okay, we know that the Department of Justice has become weaponized, the FBI, but we're going to clean it up. And we want those people who are there just to step aside, the same way Lincoln, after the Civil War, he said that we're not going to go after the Union soldiers. We're not going to, because we know that if we were to do it, it would just rip the country apart. We've been ripped apart too much. It's time to come together. It's time for the healing.
No,
it's time for us to heal now.
The Confederate soldiers.
Right, the Confederates. I'm sorry, I said the Union. I meant the Confederate soldiers. It's time for us to heal now. The person that we would see as a statesman isn't willing to do it. He's not ready to do it now. He wants to keep putting fuel to the fire. He wants to keep us divided and fighting so that they can win votes. And that's it. And if you win votes, you have the power. Again, I'm taking. I'm going to drain this country of all of its natural resources. I'm going to drain this country of all the emotions so that people can't see straight, just so that I can make certain that when I go in history, my position has been solidified as being the greatest president. Really? Is that what it's about? Or is it about making America great again? Standing up no matter what, knowing that they're going to come after you, knowing that they are coming after you, knowing that they're going to destroy you, knowing that they don't care about your family. If they're able to just get rid of you, that's it. They're going to change laws. They'll change the way people think. They'll indoctrinate them. They will rip it all apart. They will destroy the country that we said we're not perfect, but we're striving to get there. That's why we call ourselves the United States of America. We're trying to get there. And history has shown us that along the way, we made so many mistakes, but we were able to get beyond it. But it seems now that we're at a point that everything is so jaded and everyone is against each other, that no one is listening. We're talking over each other. And we want to silence anyone who doesn't agree with us. Is that what it's about? Don't we have anyone, a statesman, who would stand up and say, no, it's time for a call to action. Let's just tone it down and let's bring the country back together the way it should be, the way our forefathers had envisioned it, as opposed to all this acrimony and trying to destroy one political party just for the power. We want to stop it because that's not who we are as Americans. Guys, I can't believe it, but we're up against the time. And I've just been rattling on, envisioning what I would like for America to be. But Heather, I want to thank you for coming on tonight. And we're going to have you back on because we want to continue this conversation because I think it's really important. You tuned in to After Dark with Robin Andrew on the America Out Loud platform. Tune in again tomorrow night as we come to you again live. And as my dear friend Andrew would always say, stand for something or fall for nothing. Thank you. Good night and be blessed.